So today I'd really like to give a little bit of an introduction to Maseches Sanhedrin and to talk about the broader concepts that the Masechta talks about. And we have a tremendous privilege this year. It's a great fortune to be able to engage in the study of this Masechta, which is a favorite Masechta of many great Rashi Yeshiva. You should just know that this is a Masechta that is cherished by many. Kol Torah Kula is cherished. I think I always end up saying this. Elul time is a story that they say in the name of Rebarach Bear, I think, that during one Elul of Baruch Bear Leibowitz, that he was giving shir and he said that this is a beautiful Rashba he was about to quote. And then he stopped himself. He said, it's Elul, I have to do tshuva. All of the Torah is beautiful. So yes, that's true. All the Torah is beautiful, but certain masechtas have a particular appeal, and you're allowed to highlight that as well. And Maseches Sanhedrin is a Masechta which many have found that they are particularly drawn to and connected to. And to be able to learn Sanhedrin with you guys this year is a wonderful opportunity. It's something that really opens all kinds of doors. And Sanhedrin is fascinating in so many different ways. One way which we'll see right off the bat, because it's relevant to the first Mishnah, as you see the first parak, the whole Mishnah is crammed into that first daf, the one big Mishnah. So the first Mishnah will give us an opportunity to see some of the multifaceted power of Sanhedrin, because it'll give us the ability to talk about themes that are very relevant to the whole Masechta, very relevant to the general concepts of Sanhedrin. But at the same time, in the process of telling us those ideas, the Mishnah happens to pass through many, many different areas of Torah, and there are many discussions that will emanate from those passing comments. So we'll have the opportunity right off the bat over the next few weeks both to talk about general topics that are relevant to the whole Masechta and about many other topics that are invoked in this Mishnah which have some important details that are conveyed through this Mishnah. So topics such as Gittin and Chalitza and things like that, which happen to be elucidated just through this Mishnah, will also be on our agenda. So there's a lot that we'll get through Sanhedrin. And today, we'll focus on, probably tomorrow also, time permitting. I should also mention, by the way, that we normally have Mincha at 2:30 during the month of Elul, so we try to be especially makbid to daven with the yeshiva. So as you heard in the announcement this morning, changed, not 2:33, it's now 2:30, so we'll try to time things to be able to join the Beis Medrash Mincha for 2:30, at least for Elul. After the Yom Tov, we'll see, we'll be a little more independent, but at least for Elul, we try to, that's also part of our timing. So probably today and tomorrow, to talk a little bit about the concept of Din, which really is what our whole Masechta is about. And din is a fascinating concept. Obviously, this is a month in which we're focused on din in our own sense of the word, and it's not unrelated. And the concept of din in the earthly sense is one of the major foundations of Judaism. It's one of the foundations of the world, according to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that din is one of the three pillars that the world stands upon. And there is an extensive discussion about this, by the way. I didn't put on the Marmar Komos for time considerations, but if you have time to take a look, if you open up the tour in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, the tour has a long drasha, which I'll make reference to, about the importance and the value of din as a concept and din as an imperative. And it's fascinating to note also that, at least on the surface, din is a concept that we share with the Umas Olam. It's something that's not unique to Jews, but it is a mitzvah that applies to all of humanity. And it comes from a different place, but it's perhaps very much a shared concept. And just to talk for a minute about what is shared and what isn't. So the themes of Maseches Sanhedrin are based primarily on a number of psukim. Some of the psukim, it also happens to work out well. The veterans know that we always look for synergy. We always look to focus on points that overlap between what we're learning in the Gemara, what we're learning in the Parsha, what we're learning anywhere else. So it always works out well, at least the past few years, because the Zman tends to start around Parshas Kiseitze, and Parshas Kiseitze is chock full of mitzvahs, so you roll the dice, there's a good chance that the Masechta that you're learning happens to draw on something in Parshas Kiseitze. So in this case, We'll adjust it a little bit. We just read Shoftim. So certainly Shoftim is one of the major sources for Maseches Sanhedrin in a couple of ways, right? The number of crucial psukim that inform Maseches Sanhedrin that we read this past Shabbos, for example, what? What psukim and Parsha Shoftim are very relevant to the topics of this Masechta? The first one, the name of the Parsha, right? Shoftim v'Shotrim. That's a crucial theme, as we'll expand upon in a second. What else? Lo Saser, we'll talk about that in a few minutes also. That comes a few psukim later, also in the first Aliyah. One of the major possible sources of rabbinic authority, another crucial theme, also in the first Aliyah of Shoftim. It's another pasuk in Shoftim, which is also the first Aliyah as well, which is also very important for the themes of our Masechta. Tzedek, Tzedek Tirdof. Together with that, there are a few other psukim throughout Chumash which are also relevant. For example, another parasha that begins with a theme in Sefer Shmos begins another with another pasuk that's very relevant to this Masechta. Sorry?
Yisro.
Oh, Yisro actually is also very important. It's also something to examine exactly what the relevance of Yisro is. This parasha will come to that as well. But I was thinking of another parasha close to Yisro. Mishpatim, right? How does Mishpatim start? Ye'elu ha-Mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. So all of these psukim convey to us certain ideas which form the backbone of this Masechta, that there is an obligation to follow civil law. That's what Mishpatim seems to talk about, certain principles of human interaction. That a huge chunk of the Torah is focused on how we relate to each other. So the word Mishpatim, sometimes Mishpatim is used to identify the mitzvot of the Torah that are more accessible to human understanding. We contrast it with chukim. We talk about chukim, which are more ritual, which are more arcane and are harder for us to understand why we have to do them, kashrus and the like. While mishpatim, we use as a word to refer to the mitzvot that are more understandable. But more specifically, they tend to relate to civil law, the laws that govern how we interact with each other, monetary law, principles between man and man for the most part. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim many of such principles and frames all that by telling us that the Mishpatim should be dealt with in a forum of qualified Jewish dayanim. The pasuk says Asher Tosim Lifnehem, and the Gemara tells us that Lifnehem excludes two groups. It excludes, on the one hand, non-Jewish courts, Lifnehem V'lo Lifnei Ovdei Chachamim, and excludes also non-qualified judges. That even among the Jewish judges, has to be judges who are what we call, for now, mumchim, which we'll talk about in more length. So there, Parshas Mishpatim is a very relevant theme for our Masechta. And we're also told in this week's Parsha, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof, that we should pursue justice, which the Gemara darshans on that pasuk, practically v'halacha, that one should seek a bezdin yafeh, what that means we'll talk about. And the very beginning of the parsha, as Jacob pointed out, tells us the mitzvah of shoftim v'shodrim tite, that we should establish a court system. And the court system, whole discussion about just how regionalized the court should be, whether we have to have courts in every city or just in every district. There's a difference, apparently, between the rules for within Eretz Yisrael and the rules outside of Eretz Yisrael. Where apparently, Eretz Yisrael, we want to have an even more perfected society, so we need more courts in order to do that. And it seems that this is a mitzvah that's not only directed to Jews, because we also have another pasuk, a pasuk in Sefer Bereishis and Parshas Bereishis, which, if you saw on the Mar Mekomos this morning, there's a Gemara in the Masechta Sanhedrin later on, which tells us that the mitzvah of din is not just relevant to Jews, but is relevant to all of humanity. The mitzvah of din is one of the Sheva mitzvos of Bnei Noach, and not only is it one of the Sheva mitzvos, but it's the only mitzvah saseh. So that gives it a great importance. That essentially we're saying that there is one positive directive that is relevant to all of humanity, and that one directive is din. That's the one mitzvah, the one positive action that all of humanity is commanded to engage in. So it's an interesting question to consider. How would you understand if I say there's a mitzvah of din for Bnei Noah and a mitzvah of din that seems to emerge from all these psukim for Jews? So are these the same thing or are these different things? What would your initial instinct be? Is this just overlapping terminology or is this essentially the same mitzvah? What would you think?
Okay. They're different because, like, the psukim in like Shoftim that we saw were talking about Eretz Yisrael specifically.
Okay, so the focus on Eretz Yisrael is something to pay attention to. Okay,
Ari? It could be that for all humanity, that's what we find in Bereshit, that the framework and how it's supposed to work is what we find later, and it includes for Jews as well. So, meaning, once we find this framework for Jews, it's
so essentially, it is the same as this. It's the same that is spelled out. So this is a question where, Jacob?
I would say it's the same as well. Mm-hmm. Just for the non-Jews, more broad thing that you can have some sort of civilization.
Okay.
For the Jews, more direct, more structured, how it actually should be, and what's the most proper way to do it.
Okay, so that's an interesting point, which we'll come back to in a minute.
Is it possible to bifurcate it and say that in Eretz Yisrael is its own independent mitzvah, but in Kutz Laaretz, it would fall under the purview of a more general mitzvah? And the fact that we take specific details from Eretz Yisrael might be more of a technical thing than but fundamentally, there's dealing with Kutz Laaretz and dealing with Eretz Yisrael, which are two distinct categories.
So that's itself an interesting question also to consider. I mean, that's something the Ramban addresses a little bit. The Ramban in this week's Parsha, talking about that first pasuk. So let's consider this question for a second, because the truth is, those are one of the questions where you can't go wrong, because I always tell people that you can't go wrong if you say machlokas, because basically everything is machlokas. But here you can't go wrong either, because there's truth to both. If you want to say that they are the same mitzvah, there's truth to that, and if you want to say that they're different, there's truth to that also. And it's particularly fascinating if you saw the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Mem Vav, which talks about Bnei Noah, so the way it phrases it, that makes it sound very similar to what we read about in Parsha Shoftim, that the non-Jews are committed, the world nations of the world are commanded to set up courts. And the Gemara has language, whether it's b'chol ir v'ir in every city, or b'chol plach v'plach in every district. Sounds like it's a technical difference, but essentially, basically, it sounds like it's a very similar kind of mitzvah, that to set up courts is a directive that's told to the Jewish people in Parsha Shoftim, and it's told to the nations of the world as a function of the mitzvah of din. And it's interesting, there happens to be a major machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, regarding the mitzvah of din for Bnei Noah. And it's interesting because this is not something that's often pointed out. It may actually parallel a more subtle machlokas, or at least the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban regarding this mitzvah of Shoftim v'Shotrim. And when it comes to the mitzvah by Bnei Noah, so there was a major dispute. The Rambam, in his commentary, and then his commentary, the Rambam in his Mishneh Torah, has a commentary to Chumash. Normally, if you want to know what's going on in the stories in Chumash, you don't open the Mishneh Torah. But this is an exception, that the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, in the end of Perek Tes, Halacha Yudalid of Hilchos Melachim, so the Rambam explains a story that appears in the Chumash, that appears in Parshas Vayishlach, that the Torah tells us that Shimon and Levi executed the whole city of Shechem following the attack on Dinah, and the Rambam explains why they did that. Says the Rambam, that's because the whole city was guilty also. It's not just the actual perpetrators who were guilty, but the whole city was guilty because there is a mitzvah of din that's relevant to Bnei Noah. So the city failed to do that, and therefore they also deserve to be punished. Now the nature, how he concludes, therefore they deserve to be executed, is a separate discussion we could talk about later, but let's just focus on this detail for a second. So essentially, what is he saying? What did they do wrong? What did the members of the city of Shechem fail to do?
Either they didn't set up then, or they didn't enforce it well enough.
Or that, right, so let's assume the first, right, or the connection between the two, that basically the Rambam understands that the mitzvah of din is that there should be courts set up to enforce the judicial code. And that's what these people fail to do. That everyone, Jew and non-Jew alike, is obligated to make sure that the basic principles of law are upheld. If it's a non-Jewish society, so it's the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. But they're obligated to set up a system, basically Shoftim to Shoftim, that should have judges and they should have enforcement. And they fail to do that. So therefore, they are guilty just like the actual perpetrator. That's the Rambam's position. So it sounds like from the Rambam, and this I think is relevant to something Jacob said before, that the actual substance of civil law, let's say, for the non-Jewish population is not necessarily commanded. I mean, in broad details, we know that we have a mitzvah of din. We know that we have certain broad prohibitions. You can't kill each other. And we know that gezel is prohibited, so you can't steal. So we have to have some kind of monetary system to define whose property is whose and what's called stealing and what isn't called stealing and how do you figure out who owns what. But the details maybe are left up to the society to determine. That's what seems to be the Rambam's position. The Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban in Parshas Vayishlach, and both of you finished the Marmakomos right today, but maybe this is something Kedai to see inside, so I'll give you this to read tomorrow. The Ramban in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. For various reasons. He says, first of all, just as far as the narrative is concerned, the Rambam basically is saying Shimon and Levi did the right thing, and the Torah makes it sound like they did the wrong thing. Yaakov is very upset at them. And he has a number of other technical objections. But fundamentally also, he understands the whole mitzvah differently. Says that the mitzvah of din, as applies to Bnei Noach, is basically telling us, this is a big chiddush, that the whole code of Choshen Mishpat, all of the dinim that we have in Bava Tzion, Bava Kama, Bava Basra, all of these rules that direct behavior between Jews in the monetary realm is actually universal. So Shomrim and all of those rules, those apply to non-Jews as well, and that's what the Gemara is telling us when it tells us that dinim are relevant to non-Jews too. It's a very big chiddush. It's a chiddush especially because you might think, well, it's not such a chiddush, because all of these dinim are kind of logical, and are basically all accessible to rational understanding. So we're saying, okay, so we could figure them out, non-Jews should be able to figure them out also, and therefore they're relevant to all of humanity. So that's not really the case. It seems like it, but if you learn Bava Metzia, you learn Bava Kama, you see that it's much more challenging than that. It's not something that we would have been able to figure out on our own, and it's something that's deeply informed by specific drashos and psukim. So it is a big chiddush to say that these rules should be applicable to all of society. But essentially, that's what seems to be a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban as far as the mitzvah of din is concerned. That basically, the Rambam sees it as enforcement. We have six negatives, and that's really the behavioral rules. And you have to have one other mitzvah telling you, make sure society follows those other six rules. And the Ramban doesn't necessarily see it like that. The Ramban sees it as a function of how we resolve our disputes. That just like in the Torah, so Jews have a code how to figure out their monetary obligations to each other, so too the non-Jews have the same code. This is how they should resolve their disagreements about who owns what and who owes what to who. So it's interesting in a much more subtle way. This could be a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban also, as far as our mitzvah of din. See, one would have thought that this machlokas about Bnei Noach is really about the unique mitzvah about Bnei Noach. To what extent does it correspond to the Jewish mitzvah of din? But it could be that really it's a machlokas about din in general. Because if you look, it's a much more subtle point, but if you look, let's say, in the Ramban and Chumash and Parshas Shoftim, so he emphasizes the theme of plulim. The idea that you have judges who are going to resolve disputes, who are going to be there You're going to have judges who are going to decide who's right and who's wrong in a monetary conflict. While, if you look at the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvos, which I assume you saw in the Mar Makomos, and the Sefer Achinuch as well, takes a very similar stance, right? How do they understand the mitzvah of Shoftim and Shotrim? Right, what sense did you get from the way the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch presented? Right, it's basically to make sure everyone's behaving.
Right,
that all of this is to make sure that the rules of the Torah are being observed. So the truth is, it could be that there's a little bit of a l'shitaso here. That maybe the Ramban and the Ramban, the Rambam and the Ramban, essentially have the same two sides in both areas. That they have a machlokus about din for general society, and they bring the same two perspectives even within Jewish din. That the Ramban is focusing more on the resolution of disputes between people. That's what the mitzvah of Shofar Shotrim is about. That's what the mitzvah of Din by B'nai Noach is about. How exactly we regulate our civil interactions. And the Rambam, in both cases, is understanding that it's more about regulating society. It's more about making sure that society observes all the rules that are handed down to it, whether they are the Sheva Mitzvahs from the Noah, or they are the 613 Mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay, so far so good? So, if this is the case, then it seems to a certain extent that there is a large overlap then between the Din of B'nai Noah and the Din of Sanhedrin. That maybe to a great extent, this really is a concept that we share, maybe more than anything else in the world, that we share together with Ummah Salam. That maybe in that sense, this Masechta is the most universal of all the Masechtas that we have, that there is this link that we're essentially following a lot of the same rules and a lot of the same substance. So to a certain extent, that could be true. But there's probably more to it also. That's why I said before, you probably can't go wrong, however you answered this question, because it does seem like there is this overlap, but at the same time, there's more to it. There was a whole discussion. There's a discussion in general. We know that some mitzvahs have brachos, and some mitzvahs don't have brachos. And the Gemara never explains anywhere why it is that we make a bracha on this mitzvah, and then a bracha on that mitzvah. So there are a couple of attempts in the later literature to try to figure out what are the rules. How do we know when do you make a bracha, when do you not make a bracha? So the Ramam Ipanu, the Menachem Azariah of Panu, has a suggestion that he thinks that we only make brachos on mitzvos that are distinctly Jewish. The whole language of a bracha is Asher Kiddushanu the Mitzvosot Vitzivanu, that God directly sanctified us through his mitzvos and commanded us. He suggests it's got to be that it's only a mitzvah that is particularly Jewish that gets a bracha. So, for example, what he's addressing there, he says, what about the mitzvah of tzedakah? It's a topic the Rashbah discusses in the Tshuva. That how come when you give tzedakah, you don't make a bracha? So says the Rav Ipanu, it's because non-Jews are obligated to give tzedakah also. He's got a proof to that point. He says this is not a particularly Jewish mitzvah, and therefore the bracha is not recited. Okay? So far, so good? So some ask, the problem is, there is a Yerushalmi in the Sefer Brachos, which mentions the possibility of making a bracha on the mitzvah of din. So if that's the case, if the Rav Ipanu was right, you only make brachos on uniquely Jewish mitzvos, so how could you make a bracha on din? We just established a minute ago, it's not uniquely Jewish. This is a concept that applies to all humanity. So this is a topic that Rav Pesach Frank talks about in one of his tshuvas. Rav Pesach Frank was the great Rav of Yerushalayim, the author of many sfarim, such as Mikroi Kodesh from Yom Tov and the tshuvas Har Tzvi. So in the tshuvas Har Tzvi, Rav Pesach Frank discusses this, and he says that you have to assume that there is a difference between din for Bnei Noach and din for Jews. That yes, there may be a lot of overlap. Maybe even if you say like the Ramban, there are tons of shared details even. But still, fundamentally it's different. that on the surface there's a lot to compare, but the practice of din within the Torah, within Judaism, is much more. It is an expression of Kedusha, is an evoking of the Shechina, and therefore there is a whole other level there that deserves a brach. And perhaps we could say that din for the Torah has a number of components to it. That it shares an element with general society, in that there is a need to keep people from killing each other. Right? The basic regulatory component. Right? That's also a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos as well. Mishnah says, on the one hand, that din is one of the foundations of the world, keeps the world standing. And later on, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that we should daven for the government, whatever government it is that governs where we live, because Omali Moro, if we're not for the fact that we have the government imposing its fear on us, intimidating us, so what would happen? Ish Yisrael Chayim below, everyone would eat each other alive. So we need to have a government, we need to have a judicial system that's going to keep society from killing each other. But in addition to that, the din of the Torah also is a reflection of Kedusha in this world. And when we practice din, so that evokes the Shechina, the Gemara tells us, and presumably that adds on a whole additional layer to the experience that our Masechta is also touching upon and telling us about, and that's a fundamental component also.
Hi. For B'nai Noach, is there in din a mitzvah of B'nai Noach there, or are we saying it's only really about society?
So that's a good question. I mean, it seems like the individuals have a mitzvah ben adam l'makom. In terms of the function of the punishment, so one could suggest, and this is a much longer discussion, this, by the way, might be an appropriate Sunday discussion, maybe sometime after Yontif, if you're interested, I wouldn't mind considering the whole contemporary question of capital punishment in general society and how it draws upon some of these ideas. But it's reasonable to say that by what you mean is there an imminent of punishment, let's say for the soul, that personal redemption in the din for B'nai Noach, it's very possible that not. It's very possible that it's only functional. It's there in order to keep society from falling apart. And that's not the whole story when it comes to the Sanhedrin. So, for example, it's clear the Sanhedrin is doing many things as a function, as you just said, of an Adam L'Makom, of fixing God's world in the ritual sense, and maybe that's a distinction between the Sanhedrin and the non-Jewish courts. Now, there is an in-between. The Ran, in a often quoted drasha, the Ran writes that there is also such a thing called the Mishpat HaMelech, that is also a system of law within Jewish society, which, on the one hand, is Jewish courts, or it's Jewish government, let's say, but it's not necessarily following the rules that we'll read about in this Masechta. When one talks about some of the rules that we'll see of the Sanhedrin, so one could perhaps get a little worried. So if we read, for example, what we'll see in the coming days about what it takes to execute somebody. So what would you say if you had a murderer running around within Jewish society, Chas V'Shalom, and you read Masechta Sanhedrin or Masechta Makos, you might feel a little bit nervous because you're not going to see that it's too easy to stop it. It's going to be very hard to get yourself executed. In the American courts, you hire a fancy lawyer to get yourself exonerated. In the Sanhedrin, you have to hire a fancy lawyer to get executed. It's very hard. So does that mean that we have no protection? Does that mean that it's very easy for a murderer to get away with it because he's not generally going to follow the steps necessary to get executed? So to that, the Ran says no, that there are other ways to keep society safe, that there is the Mishpat HaMelech, that the king, which could also mean the court, but it means the government, whether it's the king himself or the court acting in a governmental function, has the right to do other things which can keep society safe, and that's basically a different track. So we have the Sanhedrin acting in a ritual function, and we have another track where the Jewish government can do what's necessary in order to keep people safe. And the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva about this, the Safa Shavu Rebbe, where he suggests that basically this is where it overlaps again with the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach, that the Bnei Noach have six mitzvos, which basically are there to give the fundamentals of a moral society, and that's all enforced by the seventh mitzvah of Din. So Jews have that part also, that they have an enforcement system, at least for those six principles, these principles that are basic necessities for a moral society. So there is this extra judicial system which the king or his representatives can do in order to keep society safe. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so within that, so we have an actual mission I think we're going to have to get to tomorrow, we only have 3 or 4 minutes, but essentially, so what emerges is that we have an element of din that is shared by all of humanity, and certain functions of din that definitely seem to overlap, and at the same time, a whole other level which is distinct and unique to the Jewish people. And this Masechta is going to deal with both. This Masechta is going to deal with elements that are shared and also the unique elements that are relevant to Jewish courts. And all of them are addressed in really one setting. The idea of Din, as I mentioned, is dealt with extensively by Datur in his introduction to Choshen Mishpat. And there he addresses the fact that Chazal tell us that whoever engages in Din appropriately, kol hadan din emes lamito, whoever adjudicates in a way that is true in the fullest sense of the word, so Chazal tell us he's considered to be a partner for the Ribono Shel Olam. He's considered to be joined together with God. So the Torah explains that how is that the case? Because God created a world that he plans on keeping around at least for a little while. He created a world that's supposed to exist. And he didn't want the world to fall apart the minute people started inhabiting it. So if that's the case, so we need to have a system that will allow it to endure. And if the Mishnah tells us that Din is one of the pillars, right, the Torah emphasizes there, says that's not why the world was created. The world was not created for Din. There's two different Mishnayos. On the one hand, the Mishnah also tells us in Pirkei Avos that the world is here for Torah, Avodah, and Milos Chasadim. That's why the world was created, so that we could do those three pillars. But what keeps the world around so that we can do those three things? That's the other three things, Din, Shalom, and Emes. When we have the three pillars of the world, so the world is able to endure, and then the reason why it's here can be fulfilled, and the dual system. So therefore, we need Din in order for the world to exist. God presumably wants the world to endure a little bit. So therefore, whoever is bringing about Din in the world is his partner. Now, so far, it would seem like that would then, if you put together all the parts here, that that's true both about Jewish judges and non-Jewish judges. Because if he's focusing specifically on the world not falling apart, so that seems to be the element that is shared by both systems of Din. That the world is upheld by judges who keep people from killing each other, and that's what it means to be a partner with the Ribono Shel Olam, which is a pretty fascinating idea. He also then goes on there to convey, and this is something you saw also in the Sefer Achinuch, if you read the Sefer Achinuch, so in the end, it's also very interesting, because Sefer Achinuch, he always puts the reason towards the end. You know, the Shor Sheh HaMitzvah, he tells you why it is. So in this case of this mitzvah, you think he already at the very beginning told you what it's there for. It's there in order to keep society straight. But then in the end, he puts a reason beyond that, right? So how does he formulate it at the end of Sefer Achinuch? Right, after giving you seemingly enough of a reason at the beginning. But then in the end, he says that there is an issue of transmitting the values of the legal system. That once you have a court set up and you have the laws being enforced, so people will learn what the values are, people will internalize all of the ideals of the Torah, and that's the ultimate goal. That's ultimately what we're trying to accomplish. So it's interesting, so Shaul brought up before Yisro. So it's true that Yisro's influence is very much felt in this Masechta, but in a couple ways, more than one way. Right, the immediate way, if I were to ask you, especially if you've seen the first Mishnah, so what do you feel Yisro is expressing here? How do you feel the connection to Yisro? What's the first thing that comes to mind? We know that Yisro told Moshe to install a hierarchical court system. Yisro told Moshe that he shouldn't just have everything dealt with himself. He's not going to be able to deal with it. He's going to collapse. So Yisro said, you should have a whole system, bigger courts, smaller courts, higher courts, lower courts. Issues that are easier will be dealt with by the lower courts. Issues that are more complex will be dealt with by the higher courts. So our first Mishnah, which talks about different levels, seems to certainly bear the impact of Yisro's advice. Right, so on that level, you see that. However, there is another, maybe even more important element of what Yisro tells Moshe, which doesn't get as much attention sometimes, but maybe that's equally important. And the Torah, if you read the Torah carefully, the Torah and his whole drasha there, in the beginning of Parshas Mishpat, he seems to be emphasizing that. Because Yisro, after he tells Moshe to set up the whole court system, he says to Moshe, he says, you have another job. He says, Moshe's job as the leader of Yisrael is that he should teach the Jews the basic values, the broad things that are important to know in order to have a harmonious society. So Yisro tells Moshe, "Behodaita mesederach yelchuba yes hamaisa asher yasod," that you should teach the people what the path is that they should walk on and the actions that they should do. And the Gemara and Bava Metzia and Bava Kama has drushes on that pasuk as hamaisa asher yasun. It means that you should tell them what the din is, and you should tell them also the fnim mishur sadin, which is a fascinating concept. I don't think we'll be able to talk about it today. For time considerations, and we'll come back to that. But since you remember this from afternoon class, so the idea that there is a broad understanding of din, that's also a part of what Yisro was saying. That not only should you have a hierarchical court system, but you have to have basically an educational endeavor also to teach the people what the values are, and that's equally, if not more, important. So that's something also the Torah in this whole drasha. So he quotes the advice of Yisro, and he focuses on this part, not just that Yisro said to have a hierarchical court system, but that Yisro told Moshe that he has to make sure everyone understands all of the values of the Torah system, and that's basically what the Sefer Achinuch also brings out when he talks about the ultimate tachlis of the mitzvah of shoftim the children. Okay, so far so good? So just to set up what we'll try to talk about tomorrow, so I'm going to make sure to catch the minute here. So once within that introduction, so we can start looking at Maseches Sanhedrin itself, maybe we'll say a few more words about this, but those are some general introductory ideas. So then to get to the Mishnah, so the Mishnah on the one hand is technical, and the Mishnah is telling us a lot of details. And if that's all it was doing, that would be enough for us. But it's very often the case that the first Mishnah in the Masechta is telling us technical details, but is also telling us something more fundamental. So what fundamentally emerges from the Mishnah? If you had to sum up the Mishnah in the shortest way possible, what would you say emerges from the Mishnah? Anyone want to take a stab at it? There are different types of din, okay, different types of bate din, right? And how many types of bate din are there?
Three.
At least three, right? So I say at least because it could be that some of them look the same but have nuances that may have to be explored. But what are the three, basically, of the least three?
The number.
Sorry?
The number?
Yeah, well, any way you want to identify them, because that's part of the question, right? So basically, how can you most succinctly identify the three bate din that the Mishnah talks about? You want to take a stab at it? Number of what, two?
3, 23.
Okay, so 3, 23, and 70 or 71. All right, so now if you wanted to try to, let's say, in the shortest way possible, most concise way possible, make categories for those three, how would you do it? Okay, so Mamanis seems to be
three,
right? That's about all that. It seems to include lots of other things also, at least broadly speaking, Mamanus. What did I hear with that? Yeah?
Nefashos.
So Nefashos, right? Nefashos, once you're dealing apparently with capital law, so that has its own unique considerations, which the Mishnah explains, but that's going to have a lot to deal with also. And then what would you call the third category?
Capital.
Well, that's the second category.
Like national.
Also national needs, right? That basically there is one Supreme Court, And the Supreme Court, you might think, say capital law, like you were saying, you might think that capital punishment by definition means that it's the most severe type of punishment. But even here, it might be helpful to compare to American law. In American law, it's true that the Teaneck Township doesn't execute people. You need a higher level court than that. But it's not only Washington either. The states do execute people, right? So as much as life and death matters would seem to be the most severe issues, but that's not necessarily what goes to the highest level of court. It has a certain degree of qualification. But the highest standard, the Supreme Court, is dealing with a number of things. But, as you put it, so perhaps in this case the Sanhedrin is there for certain national concerns. So issues that are either relevant to Klal Yisrael as a whole, let's say such as your nidachas, because they're not dealing with individuals, we're dealing with whole cities, so that becomes, you need a national level kind of court to deal with it, or deal with a shevet, right? Or things like Yerushalayim and its boundaries, which are relevant to the national definition. So that seems to be a national consideration. So what emerges from the Mishnah, and this is something I want to flesh out a little bit tomorrow, what emerges from the Mishnah is Mishnah is not just telling us details, right? It's not just telling us, okay, here's the list. If you have such and such a situation, here's how many you need. But the Mishnah is telling us different types of din and different functions that exist. And all of this is building on what we just said about the mitzvah of din and its different forms. So now the Mishnah is telling us that there are at least three different ways in which dayanim have a role in life. Could be many more. It could be that they'll be subdivided a lot. So the first thing we'll have to try to figure out, take them one at a time, what is the concept of dini mamonos b'shlosha, and that, B'ezras Hashem, we will start tomorrow and see how far we can get. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. We'll try to run to the basement. I should be there for the...